Welcome to Discover Indie Film. I'm Jeff Howard, and I've got Rick Ives on Zoom with me. Hey, Rick.
Hey, Jeff. Thanks for having me here today.
Thanks for being here. So this is, I'm just going to come right out and say it. This is a slight departure for Discover Indie Film.
Yeah, this one's a little weird, right?
This is, it's cool. I mean, and as you know, cursing is allowed on this podcast. I'm going to give you what I consider a big ass motherfucking compliment, which is almost every filmmaker on here normally comes through either Sherman Oaks Film Festival or Film Invasion Los Angeles that I program both here in LA. You're out in Atlanta. And you actually, I get a surprising number of emails from people who are like, I made an indie film and will you talk to me? And generally I'm like, I don't have the time or
right.
Take a peek. Now, some of them look promising, but you know, you sent me your trailer and it looked rad. And then you sent me a link and I was like, I'm just going to come right out and say it. You pulled off what I think I could probably name 100 people I've known over the last 30 years who have talked about making a film like this.
Oh.
And nobody pulls it off. Those who try, fail.
Wow.
But it's high compliments. It's essentially the one room thriller heist film. I don't think any of these things are spoilers.
Nope. So far, so good.
And, you know, with just a... funny that it's called Solid Rock Trust is the name of the film, because I was about to say, with a rock solid performance anchoring everything. I'm sure when we get to it, you'll talk about your casting process and whatnot.
Yeah, of course.
But so I took a look at it. I'm like, all right, Rick Ives is going to get on the Discover Indie Film podcast because of what you accomplished. So
cool. Well, yeah, thank you so much. I'm ecstatic to be here. I know that you usually have like a pathway for people to get on your show, and I don't know why you picked me other than what you just said. But
that's
I'm
exactly
happy that,
why.
It's
exactly
yeah, I'm why. Happy that I'm happy to be here chatting with you about it. Anyways,
yeah. So before we hop in, and I ask you the super generic question of how you got interested in filmmaking and being a creative. You want to say where people can catch Solid Rock Trust?
Oh, sure. You can watch Solid Rock Trust on Tubi. You can watch it as of the time we're recording this. It's on YouTube through our distributor's page. You can watch it on Amazon. I think it's still a rental
there. Is that
like
YouTube VOD or is it just on YouTube on there?
It's free. It comes with ads. So you'll be watching some commercial breaks.
Oh, nice.
You can watch it on Amazon. I think it's still a rental there for now. And then in the future, it will be popping up more on different channels, Roku and, you know, stuff like that. Our distributor kind of rolls it out in different places.
Cool. So, it's funny. You'd already used the word distributor, and I was about to ask the bonehead question of, did you self-distribute? But no.
We didn't. No. So we went with Indie Rights. I don't know if you talked to anyone who's used them before, but they've got kind of a plan for... you know, micro budget to independent feature films. So been pretty happy with them so far.
Oh, good. Good to hear it. We can talk more about that later, but anyhow,
yeah, sure.
So now people know where they can catch it. And
yeah, thank you.
I'm just going to shift gears back to before you talk about Solid Rock Trust. You know, you are, all I know about you is you live in Atlanta and you made a feature film that looks great and tells a story, and that couldn't have happened, you know. Now watch, you'll prove me wrong and you'll say, actually, no, 3 weeks before we shot this film, I came up with the idea.
Not quite.
Led up to it.
Not quite. Nope.
Led up to this.
Not going to be that easy. Well, you're in for a little bit of a story then. So I was the kid who made all videos for their school projects in high school. You know, you've talked to those types. Every time we had a project to do, I'd convince my teacher to let me shoot something instead. So that was always fun.
Those types. And I watched, because my era, I'm old. So like when I was in high school, the idea of a video project that would have, you know, your parents, you would have had to use like the VHS camcorder thing.
Well, it was still sort of that. I was playing them off of VHS, but we were recording usually with mini DV. Yeah. So it was not quite the digital era that we have today.
Yeah,
definitely no phones.
Mini DV when you had those little tapes.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
I still got a lot of those in a box somewhere in my attic. I was watching every DVD featurette that I could find whenever we rented from Blockbuster. We'd watch the movie, you know, with the family that night. And then the next morning I'd go through all the special features.
Right. So you were already as a kid getting into how films are made, not just enjoying the films, but how.
Yeah, totally. And as soon as I realized, I think it was like one of those eighth grade, maybe freshman year trips to a local college, you know, where you learn about different career paths. As soon as I realized you could go to school to do this kind of thing, it just clicked. I knew that had to be me. So that was always the goal. I moved to California, you know, in my 20s to go to college. And
actually, where were you growing up? I don't know if you said.
All around the United States, actually. My dad was a government employee, so we were bouncing around.
And that always leads to interest in the arts, right?
Yeah, it kind of does. I spent a school. Yeah, definitely. Didn't have roots like a lot of kids do, I guess. So I spent a lot of time playing video games, watching movies. Not that I didn't have friends, but that's what I connected to. Went to college, landed a real good job right out of college working for James Cameron's 3D company. So that was 2010.
And you came out to California. Would you want to name the school or?
Oh, sure. I can tell you it's called Brooks Institute. Have you ever heard of that?
Up in Santa Barbara?
Santa Barbara was the photography campus, and then Ventura County in Ventura City, right south of Ojai.
I went to UC Santa Barbara when Brooks was only still photography.
So I was the video program.
I knew a bunch of Brooks people.
Yeah, nice. Well, you won't anymore because they've since closed, and I have a degree from a college that doesn't exist. So that's always fun. Anyways, I learned a lot there, you know, making short films and stuff, a lot of the hands-on experience, landed a good job. I was there for a while doing, I wanted to work in post-production. So I worked in dailies and we were doing 3D dailies. And right away, the first credit that I have to my name was Hugo. What was that movie? The Invention of Hugo Cabret,
right?
Yeah. 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 That's right. Came out Best Picture winner. And I was like, dude, this is easy. People still complain about all the time. Working in the film industry, I got a Best Picture winner. Not quite that easy, but it was.
Did when they got the award, the Oscar? Did they thank the guy who did the 3D dailies?
No, not
even close. Shame on them.
Still a lot of credits in that movie. But from then on, I was working on. Yeah, from then I was working on, you know, a lot of A-list stuff, which is fun. Got to meet a lot of actors. Got to meet a lot of cool directors, DPs, editors, that kind of stuff. At some point, the company I was working for got sold. I was kind of bouncing around a little bit within the new company, but not really finding a home. But I got offered a job out here in Atlanta to work on dailies, and that was going to be for Marvel Studios. So that was for Avengers Endgame, Infinity War. Maybe you've heard of some of those. And I've sort of been with Marvel ever since doing post-production. After those, I shifted over to an assistant editor, which is what I do now, and I work on all the Disney Plus stuff. I worked on Loki, Captain America, Winter Soldier, Miss Marvel, whole list. Guardians of the Galaxy 3, which just came out. Hawkeye. I've got a couple more that I can't say yet because
that ecosystem that they set up in Atlanta. They pulled you out from LA, but you became part of the ecosystem that made Atlanta really on par with Hollywood.
Yeah. And we have big stuff coming through all the time. It's crazy. Sometimes I'll turn down huge shows, you know, non-Marvel stuff, just because I'm already working on something. And I can't believe I'm turning down, you know, like this franchise that I grew up watching. I'm not going to work on that because I'm already working on another one. So it's fun though. And then in my free time, I still want to be an editor. So I was always editing indie features. I teamed up with a company out in your neck of the woods. They've done 4 indie features now. And at some point I was like, dude, I could make one of these. So I pitched it to them, this movie that I had in mind, which was Solid Rock Trust. They liked the script. We were going to do it. COVID hit. We're not going to do it. Eventually we decided let's just do it out in Georgia. So they still helped me produce it from, you know, over there. And we shot it out here in 11 days, on, you know, a break that I had and edited it myself, did all the visual effects.
I was going to say, it kind of would have been the perfect film to shoot during lockdown.
And in fact, it was. And people ask a lot, was this a COVID movie? You know, did you make this because of COVID? And yes and no. I mean, I had the script, you know, much earlier than that. But at some point we were like, dude, if there's ever a COVID movie, this is it. Because we could do it on a tiny crew, very little actors. And that's what we decided to do. So,
but was the real, was part of the inspiration that that you were writing for a budget that that company worked in?
Yeah, definitely. My biggest complaint on low budget indie movies are they try to do more than they have the money to do. Would you agree?
1,000%. I would. Yeah. And not only that, but those are probably the ones that are trying to do something that Hollywood does very well. Mm-hmm, so why would you bother trying to
be that
their style of film without their level of
money? And I can tell, man, I can tell when I watch those, and I watch a lot of those because I love watching those. But I can tell you got too many actors. You're trying to do too many stunts. You got too many locations. There's no way you could shoot this with the budget you have with those constraints. You know what I mean? So my whole idea was, what if we took the same budget and made it look incredible and have a really good story to support it, but we have limited number of, you know, locations, actors. And you said yourself, you've heard about people trying to do this before. I know it's a tough sell, one person, one room, but I was convinced that I could do it if I had some interesting stuff happening.
And you had your angle, your entree into the one person, one room thing was, we have seen this character in it's almost
all the time
cliche, right? Every Will Smith movie, aren't there like SNL sketch? There's, or the Key and Peele. Someone did sketches about like the computer nerd, just outside of the actual group doing the heist, and you just cut to them at their computer when
you need to for a line of dialogue or a quip.
Yeah, or like, okay, let me. Oh yeah, like the worst thing was
right.
Mary Lynn Reichkub's character on 24. Like,
oh yeah, totally. Oh, yeah.
I'll just type a little bit. And now I just changed every street light in Atlanta.
Or, you could get any camera in the world, like at the push of a button.
But by focusing on a character that we know that we actually never get to know, we just know, you know, the person running the, you know, coordinating the heist from the keyboard.
Right. Well, and the other thing is, you also have had that experience with a bank heist movie, because we know a bank heist movie so well at this point, right? It's been done so many times. So I was like, what if we just did that movie, except you don't need to see what's happening in there because you already know what's happening in there. You're just going to hear it. And in that way, it kind of becomes a radio play where you get to know people based on their voices and sound effects that are happening. And it's kind of in your mind's eye, you know, so you fill in the blanks.
For sure. And then you wrote it to be as compelling as possible. And were you aware as you were writing it that you were writing a lead role that was, pretty paramount? I mean, obviously casting your lead was probably the most crucial thing you did.
Yeah, I'd say that was probably the biggest risk to take, was who do you put this onto? Totally. And I was writing it with that in mind, because I'm like, I want to get an actor who can really show their stuff and they're going to be proud of this thing. And I'm going to give them a lot of opportunities to show their range. So we're going to have funny, and we're going to have angry, and we're going to have sad. And we haven't talked about it yet, but this character has a whole bunch of different accents. So in a way, they're being a whole bunch of different people because they're acting within the movie. So you get to see a whole set of skills that you might not get to see in a regular indie movie, which is what I wanted to do.
And you probably set a record in a screenplay for the number of parenthetical accent notes.
So right? many.
Because every other line of hers probably says it shifts from like Albanian accent.
It did. It did. Accent. And you know what? The original didn't. I just kind of set that up at the beginning and then let it go. And at some point someone was like, man, I'm so confused on who she's supposed to be at this time. So I had to go back and put all those parentheticals in, and it made a big difference. And it also added like 4 pages to the script. Yeah,
you added, seriously, I'm sure it was like hundreds of lines got added.
Yeah.
But lines, not dialogue lines, but
right,
lines
right.
On a screenplay. But and I assume, besides it being a challenge, but I assume when word got out that you were casting this, I'm sure actors were super, even if it was might have been intimidating, I'm sure actors were pretty damn eager to do a film like this where they could just show extreme range and
Yeah. Well, it's tough because how do you find a person who can do all those accents so well? And that's what everyone told me when they read the script was, this is great, but you're never going to find this person to do it.
Maybe I have the opposite thought. I was like,
Okay.
Well, because I assume, right, the accents that she's doing are with each member of her, of the crew she put together for the heist. And so she's just made herself a different person for each one, which, by the way, is I think it's great writing. That's one of those things when, like, you first hear it, you're like, this is a, like, I assume you sat down and said, how would I pull off a bank heist and make it as unlikely as possible that I get caught? Like, right. Was that the...
Yeah, totally.
The thought experiment?
Well, a lot of it was, what can I put into this movie that's going to keep it interesting? Because I know we're just sitting at a desk. And I was always fascinated by people who do different accents. You know, when you see a big actor for the first time out of character in a completely different accent than you know them as, and you're like, hold on a second, is that person not American? Because I always thought that they were. It's, you're looking at them, you hear their voice, but it feels like a different person almost.
Oh, especially the Brits and the Australians.
Yeah, when they're so good at their American accents.
It's honestly, it's unfair, but it is always cool. And accents are cool. But I was about to say also, she is using accents not with people of those cultures, just with Americans. So like the demands on her don't have to be perfect. She just has to convince, you know, them, dumb enough to run into a bank armed.
Sure, sure. So that was the idea behind that was, oh, you know what? I bet if she had accents that could keep this interesting. Why would you need to do that? Well, it kind of writes itself. You want to pretend to be different people so no one knows who is really in control of all this, right? No one has the full picture.
And for that, I would assume most actors would be like, oh my God, this is like a once in a lifetime shot to.
Yeah. Well, we found Coco. She came in, was one of the auditions. And actually, we auditioned before COVID, and then COVID hit, and we were all stuck at home. And I wasn't going to call somebody up and be like, hey, I kind of want to make this movie at some point, but I don't know when.
But I want you to be. So you had her in mind for a while, but
I did. So it was probably a year before I finally messaged her back and was like, "Hey, I don't know if you remember this, but you came in. I really liked your audition. Would you like to read the script?" And we connected.
I'm sorry. I want to jump in and ask. Like, were the sides you had them do? Like, was it accent heavy?
Oh, totally. Yeah, because I was looking for a person who could do that and a person who was real good at, you know, like dramatic crying and yelling, that, you know, that kind of thing. She liked the script a lot. And in fact, she brought more accents than I had on the page. She was like, hey, I do one of these. Cause at some point I was like, man, nobody's going to be able to do all of these. So I just doubled up accents. Like, she's going to do this one for these people and this one for these people. And she started adding more. And I said, yes, let's go in. So I did a little rewrite to change that, you know, to write to her. And it worked out really well. This was real low budget in that we had a small crew and one location that was actually an abandoned warehouse. So I was pretty upfront with everybody, like, hey, this is going to be down and dirty. And especially with Coco, you're not going to have any actors to bounce off of. That's going to be tough for you. And it's probably going to be hot in there and we're going to be doing a lot of pages a day. Are you on board with something like this? Cause it's going to be a challenge. And of course she was. And I'm just real happy with how it turned out. And I feel like I scored with her.
Were you not able to have people off camera, like for her to play against, or?
You know, if you look at the amount of pages that each of the other characters are on, it's not that much.
Right.
Each of those characters are only on for like 15 or 20 minutes at the most. And I didn't really want to be paying people to just sit around, you know, all day, every day to just do a very few number of lines. So I went back and forth on how to do this. Ultimately, we ended up doing, Zoom calls like this in advance. So we recorded all of the audio from the other side of the phone early and let her and the actor one-on-one get through the whole script, kind of one character at a time. And I recorded all of it. I edited all of it and cut it down to a speed that I liked. And then I gave it to her on her phone, her iPod, and she would just listen to it and like rehearse against, you know, the recordings that were already done. And then on the day, we just pushed play on the same recording and she would act against that playing over the PA system. And it was cool, man. It felt like intense because the timing is all right. And it felt like she was on a real phone call and worked flawlessly.
That's a brilliant solution.
Yeah. It worked really well.
Yeah.
There were a number of times we have you know, there was a lot of camera work involved. Like, we're going to start out slow and we're going to get more intense, you know, that kind of stuff as the time goes on. And later in the movie, there's a couple times we're like walking around with the camera and we'd call cut and the camera guy would turn to me and be like, whoa, I felt that one because so many people are screaming, you know, over the phones and she's screaming at them and you really get into it. Like you could feel that on set. It was fun.
And was there, so I guess that actually made it super simple for her. I was about to ask the silly question of like, were there times when she'd actually slip into the wrong accent with the wrong person and then have to redo it? Or was
she would not, because she was so good. She could literally go for 10 or 20 pages at a time without messing up. It was incredible.
Wow.
So we didn't have that much mistake, you know, that wise. Most of the mistakes were like, oh, I'm pushing play on the wrong, the wrong file. No, that's not the scene. Sometimes we didn't have recordings ahead of time, like, you know, for the smaller parts, a cop calling in or 911 operator or something. So we'd have someone offset, you know, reading that stuff. But that was it. Yeah. So no really mistakes like that.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, and obviously, I mean, you probably brought in a lot of people when you're auditioning, but yeah, Coco Marshall, you must've just, I imagine when you sat down to edit, you were like, just patting yourself on the back or just thanking the universe for bringing this actor in for you.
Yeah, she was just so great. And you're going to see more of her in the future. She's been the lead in a couple indie movies. And then she was just in one that was on Lifetime last week. You could check out called The Man with My Husband's Face, I think. So she's doing great. And we're talking about what we could do next. And, you know, that's the actor that you don't let go of if you're going to make something else. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I have to say, I mean, I guess she's an American, right?
She is. Yeah. She speaks two or three other languages fluently and she's just real interested.
She has such
a
European vibe. Like it feels like you flew someone in from, you know, Paris or Rome.
Yeah. She's from LA, but she's lived all over. I think she was in, I can't remember, Sweden or something for a while. And I know I think she's in Spain like right now as we're talking. She just went over there for a while.
So
she gets around. And she just really loves accents and different, you know, like how that works. So she spends a lot of time just on her own studying that. In fact, it was in her demo reel, which is one of the reasons I called her in to begin with, because she could do a couple. So now I tell everyone, or I tell her when she needs to show people her acting reel, just put my movie on for them and they'll see.
For real. I mean, I'm sure it is the kind of thing where casting agents would just watch the first 5 minutes and be like, I got places I could use this person. Yeah.
What's happening here?
Yeah. But I mean, besides just in the first 5 minutes, like, you know, that she can carry, you know, mm-hmm. she also has that unidentifiable presence on camera, right?
Yeah, she does have that. And it's weird because I did start to separate the Coco I know and the character Maddie. And in the morning, it was kind of strange. Like, oh, I miss Maddie. I'm ready for you to get back into character. And then at the end of the day, she was exhausted. Of course, that's my fault for doing so much to her. And she'd go back into her normal self. I'm like, oh yeah, Coco is a different person than the person I've been spending, you know, all day with.
Yeah. Well, you said 11 days.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We did it in 11 days.
And I imagine, I mean, the runtime is almost an hour 40, right? So
yeah, that's right.
It's like an hour 37, I think. Cause I looked at it this morning. So
yeah. Oh, thank
you. So that's, you know, that's almost averaging 14 pages a day, I think.
It was a lot of pages. It's kind of cheating. It's kind of cheating, you know, because we had most of the acting kind of decided on already because we'd done a lot of prep work and we didn't have company moves, which is what I was going for, right? We didn't have a lot of stunts. We didn't have, you know, actors to block. It was just her doing her thing, almost like a stage play.
Yeah. Yeah. And I imagine you spent a lot of time with the inserts and things too. It wasn't all just dialogue.
Yeah, we did. We had a full day that was just inserts.
Editor, you knew you wanted to be breaking up what's on camera a lot.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Totally. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so you must have had, I guess I should call it the shot list from heaven, not the shot list from hell, but it must have been a shot list that you looked at and said.
I did. I had a shot list for every insert. Like, there's that element where she pushes a button on a clock every 2 minutes because she can't be on the phone longer than 2 minutes. So I was like, okay, I know I need 15 different angles of this, and we're just going to do the clock for 2 minutes and just do it from that angle 15 times. And then there's also an element of little army figures on the blueprint of the bank. And I knew where everyone moved, you know, throughout the script. So I'm like, okay, we got to record this moving from here to here. So we would just have all that stuff. And for one day, actually it was a rainy day because we couldn't record sound that day. We just put in all the lights to make it look like daytime. And we just went down through the script for like, I want to say 100 shots, you know, and she just sat there and moved pieces and hit the button and picked up phones and hung them up. And she's like, this is the weirdest day I've ever had to act.
But probably there'll be more like that. Sometimes there's days where you're just picking up all the inserts and things. But yeah, in this case, it was a special case because, I mean, technically, well, you have a cast of 1.2 or whatever, you know, like everyone else is either a voice. And then of course there is another actor that we see towards the end and then a little actor cameo at the end, but I assume it's the same actor whose voice we hear.
Yep. All the people you see are the real actors. Yeah. The voice actors. Yeah. So
yeah, though you could have switched that up with the cop and stuff.
Yeah, totally. I wanted there to be an element of, I told you before we started, I watch a lot of podcasts or listen to a lot of podcasts. And then at some point I see who it is who I've been listening to. And I think, hold on a sec. That's not their face. I know what their face looks like. I've been listening to them. No, I don't. But there's that weird disconnect of you kind of have an image in your head of what they're supposed to look like. And I wanted you, the audience, to have that same thing. So when you see them, you think, that's not what I pictured, but it is the truth, you know?
Really, because the head cop role, that's exactly who I pictured.
Oh, it is? Great.
But actually, I think the Rowan guy, I'm not sure I pictured.
Something a little different.
Yeah, I think I pictured someone a little more out of central casting, which is good. I'm glad he had like a look I wasn't expecting.
Oh, good. Sweet.
Yeah. He had a rom-com vibe when I saw him, but anyhow.
Maybe on the next one.
Maybe. But, and I assume after all that, so after the rough 11 days, then this became a thing that you had to edit in your spare time.
Yeah, that's right. I had a little break from work from the real job. So I was editing that in the evening. I was cutting another sports documentary. That's not out yet. Hopefully will be this year. Kind of at the same time. So, you know, you just find ways to fit it in.
Well, I imagine in this case, I'm going to assume you were very happy with how it was coming together and with what you had gotten. You didn't use the word pickups. Were there any pickups needed?
Oh, no. I knew I couldn't afford pickups.
So the fact that you got it all done, I'm just imagining like you were looking forward to jumping onto your computer at night and work on this because it was there. Like, I'm sure it was rewarding to see that.
Yeah, totally rewarding. Probably the hardest part of it all was all those computer inserts. I made all those by hand after the fact and made them look like computer screens. So that took quite a while. There's something like 30 or 40 computer inserts made from scratch.
Yeah, and you had to create the look of, you know, it's very frequently it has the look of that crappy industrial programmed by computer guys who don't care about user interface.
Look, right? Yeah. Like, there's Mac interfaces and Windows and DOS type stuff because I wanted it all, you know, to look different.
And there is DOS command line looking stuff. And
all that stuff was made out of scratch in After Effects. So that was work too. But I don't know. Are you a filmmaker too? Or are you typically just do the
festival programming and stuff? I'm long retired from that side of the world. But, okay. But I'm pretty familiar with it.
You do podcasting though. So you probably have the same experience where you have your little thing. Like this is your thing and you love it and you work so hard for it and you're so proud of it. And then at some point, it just sucks, man. Nobody is going to care about this. Nobody's going to watch this. It's awful. And then you're ready to put it out there in the world. And you're like, you know what? To hell with it. If they like it, they like it. If they don't, they don't. And then hopefully they do. And it kind of comes back around and say, yeah, you know what? I could be proud of this thing. So
I actually don't trust the people who are sure what they did is incredible.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm not sure why. Maybe that's a bias, but yeah, there's,
you go through phases, you know?
Yeah. Well, and sometimes my job as a festival programmer and podcaster is like, I joke about, I pull out the pom poms and I cheer. I'm like, dude, you did it. You did it.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
You did it. And they're like, no, the film in my head was so much better. I'm
right,
like,
right. And when I'm you're like, so close to it, you know all the flaws.
Right.
Yeah, but you know all the flaws. It's hard to like go. I've read once that Spielberg, the only movie he can go back and watch and enjoy is that first Indiana Jones movie. Because everything else he can see, like he sees all the things that
he wanted to do better. They're very frequently wrong, right? I mean, now this is unrelated to you, but George Lucas looks at the very first Star Wars film, which I like to call Star Wars because that's what it was.
Sure. When
I
saw originally.
And he sees a million flaws. And I'm like, no, that's the only film that's perfect because you didn't get to do it all your way.
Right. Right. Yeah. Good point.
And all the thing, you know, and Spielberg. Yeah. Like, you know, we all know what we think of Spielberg going back and changing guns to walkie talkies and people's hands in E.T. Like you're trying to. You're criticizing your work, and what you should actually realize is it's the things, it's the way it turned out that makes it special. And
yeah, totally.
So precious.
So it's tough. I mean, I've been like you and told other people, man, I can't believe you did this. Who cares if there's flaws, because it's incredible that it exists. And that's part of the reason I love watching all the super low budget movies anyways, because even if it's bad, I'm like, man, there's something here though. That's so special. You took a swing for the fences and I think it's great. But to be on the other side of that is so hard. It's like, you can't see the forest for the trees. You know, it's easy to give someone else advice, but not yourself. And it's the same thing. I know in my head, like, yeah, I should be proud. And on some level you are, but man, it's hard to let go of the stuff, you know, you could have done better.
Well, you know what? I'll just, you know, I want to compliment you that besides the work, I mean, here you are working on some of the biggest budgeted films of all time. I mean, I believe that's the Endgame poster behind you. Or
yeah, that's true. I'm a small cog in a big machine.
You got your poster for Solid Rock Trust and Endgame right next to it, which is pretty cool. Have Solid Rock Trust and Endgame on the same wall.
Yeah,
but the fact that you're working on stuff at that level, you know. And yeah, I mean, one of, you know, the end crawl of these Marvel movies is a ridiculous with the number of names. I mean,
ridiculous with a capital R. It's insane.
When it shifts to digital artists, like, it's just like, okay, this is Guardians of Galaxy 3 had.
And I'm never buried in the VFX spots, because you're right. Those are just walls of text, but still people will text me and be like, hey, I saw your name. And I think, how did you find my name?
I know, but there's a pattern recognition thing. Right? I was going to say, I love that you're working on that stuff, but then you totally appreciate the bare-boned indie approach where, you know, one of my favorite indies that's come through the festivals, a guy wrote a brilliant film and made it in his apartment, and it had lots of scenes, and he just kept redressing his living room.
Oh, yeah.
He did a bar. He made his own cardboard, life-size cardboard cutouts of extras and just... So in this low budget film, extras are cardboard shapes.
You know what? If you can make it part of the story, if like that's part of the DNA of the story you're telling to begin with, then it's fine. There's no reason you can't do it.
It's a great commentary on, you know, the whole extra thing, the whole background artist thing is kind of funny that there are teams of people who sit in the background and move their mouths silently because they are cardboard as far as the film is concerned.
But he's making a statement, you know, that was his intention from the beginning. It wasn't like he took cardboard cutouts and was hoping no one would notice.
Yeah, no, he,
you know, and that's the problem that so many people do is like, we're just going to do this and hope no one notices that we don't have the budget for it.
Exactly.
Well, I noticed.
Yeah. That's when it's harder to give a thumbs up to, yeah. Or if they try to do a fight scene and with no stunt coordinator and
It's just not there.
And
yeah.
You're just like, oh man.
The thing is, you can do that stuff if you have a smart way of doing it. There's a fight scene that I really loved in the Scorsese movie with DiCaprio, obviously, Gangs of New York, where they're fighting from POV. And it's literally, and it's so like intense when you're watching it. But if you really break it down, and this is what we did in college, and I did some fight scenes this way to, you know, cheap, but it really is just a person punching at the camera and then the other person punching at the camera. And that's it. There's nothing, and anybody can do that. It's not even dangerous. But if you're smart enough to figure out you could do it that way, then there's no reason you can't.
And the one I always like to bring up, I bet you'll love it, is with the ear in Reservoir Dogs. That's off camera. He just tilts up to a ceiling, and then you just hear
it's implied
happening. And you needed zero effects, nothing. Mm-hmm, just but everyone has now pictured what's happening, and they'll all tell you that they saw that, but they didn't see it. They just looked at a ceiling.
And that's what I was hoping you would feel watching this movie when you hear gunfire happening on the other end of the phone and people screaming, you know,
gunfire
you know what's happening. You've seen a bank heist movie before. She even has a line in there that's like, I don't need to see it. I've lived it already, because you know, that's what the audience should be doing now.
For sure. Well, so you did the edit and then you put it out in the world and I assume you, and I guess you want to give a shout out to your composer, because I think...
Oh, nice.
I think, by my memory, I don't know if I think the score is almost like ever-present, isn't it?
Yeah, totally. It is. I wanted it to feel like an action movie, even though you're not watching the action stuff. I found this guy, Joey Westerlund, on Reddit. Just one of the, like, I'm a composer subreddits, and started emailing people, you know, after I looked up their work, and I said, hey, I'm doing a feature, really like your stuff, are you interested? And he said, yeah. I said, I can't pay you a lot, this is real low budget. I can pay you something, but it's not what you're worth, and I'm only going to do like an hour of music out of 90 minutes. And he said, sure. And it turned into 90 minutes out of 90 minutes. And it's great. I love the score. Every time he would send stuff back and I'd put it in, I'd be working on it at night. My wife would walk by the room and say, hold on, Is that our movie? The music? Yeah, that's Joey's stuff. He's so good. He did it all himself. It's all on his computer. I mean, he plays guitar and stuff too, but it's mostly just keyboard and I don't know how.
Yeah, I'm sure your wife in the next room could have been like, oh, he's watching a movie. Because it's straight out of a heist movie.
Yeah. So I had temp stuff thrown in there. I was like, make it, you know, this feel like this. And then he would just turn over 15 minutes at a time every week, the way he writes. So if anyone's out there looking for a composer, I got one to recommend for you. Because
it wasn't time consuming, huh? It sounds like he was quick.
He was quick, and he works a full-time job that's not in the film industry. So he was just doing it at night.
Dang.
For me. I know. Dang. He's really talented.
There you go. And I assume, did you do like most of the post stuff yourself too? I know you mentioned After Effects and you talked about how you create screens and imagine.
Yeah, I did all the editing. I did all the After Effects. I did most of the sound design. And then the stuff I can't do is the score. I can't do color grading. So I have someone who does that.
I mean, props to that too, because the look is mix. Great.
Yeah. And he's great. He's like a senior colorist at Turner Studios, here in Atlanta. And then a sound mixer, cause I can't do that part either. And then that was it. So our post team was only, you know, four people,
And how cool that in Atlanta, in spite of it, you know, having so much, you know, major studio stuff going on, that you can pull people into a little fun indie project, that there are enough people there willing who are interested in doing something. I mean, I'm not going to throw stones at the big stuff, because sometimes it is good. It's not always good, but it's nice that there's people who are like, yeah, you know what? I'll take a break from what I'm doing at Turner and work on this what is really amounts to, I think it's fair to call it an experimental film.
Yeah, I guess that's fair to say. If you find people who really like what they do and they're good at what they do, a lot of times they're kind of pigeonholed in something specific because they're so good at that thing. So my friend at Turner, he does all sports. Like, that's all he does. And if you can bring them a project that's different and give them, you know, some creative freedom, then I think people are excited to do stuff like that, even if it's lower budget. I did pay everybody. It wasn't all for free, but it's not what they're worth. I told everyone that. and we are still going to be part of a team and make this thing like really cool. And so far, everyone's been real proud of what came out of it. So hopefully it turns into more work for each of them.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And that is an excellent point that people do get pigeonholed and used for the same thing over and over. So yeah, giving them a chance. It's not just the actors who are getting a chance to step outside the comfort zone.
Yeah, totally.
Although in this case, you definitely gave an actor a chance to, like you joked earlier, you basically talk about food for the real.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like give and take, because she loves me for it and hates me for it, because there were some days we just rocked her like 20 pages in a day and 10 minutes of it was crying. So, you know, you're just going to have like, be in a terrible spot for hours and hours and then throw more onto her. She tells a story about the Spanish sequence towards the end. I threw at her at the end of the day and was like, hey, this isn't scheduled till later, but I really want to do it right now. And so we just did an extra 4 pages that she wasn't ready for and just hated me for that. Like, why are you doing this to me? But I think that was the best stuff, because she looks so broken and worn and tired. And that's exactly what the character's going through. So,
and was that you wearing your producer's hat saying, wait a minute, I can squeeze this in now and then we don't have to worry.
No, that was me wearing my first AD hat, because I had forgotten a whole scene on the schedule completely. And I was like, oh shoot, I'm going to miss this thing. I got to get this. And so
you had to squeeze it in somewhere.
I added it in. Yeah, I did. And there's a sequence too. Maybe you remember this part where she's negotiating with herself as two different people. It's kind of like an editing trick.
I think so. Yeah. Yeah. I saw
it. And that scene was not written that way. She actually was going to go back and forth, you know, with each person she's actually negotiating with. And I was like, man, I forgot a whole scene today. I need to add this in. I'm going to rewrite this scene to be half the length and then fill it in with the scene that I forgot on the schedule. So that morning I rewrote that scene by hand twice, because I didn't have a computer or a printer there, and on notebook paper, and gave her a copy and gave me a copy. And we redid that whole thing, you know, that morning, and it turned out really well.
Did you sleep at all during these 11 days?
No.
Or 2 weeks?
I don't sleep anyways. I have 2 kids.
I assume the 11 had like a 2-day break in the center. It was like 5 break and 6.
Yeah, we did have 2 weekends mixed in there. So there were breaks for people.
So you don't sleep anyway? You haven't
That's just yet? That's just the way I go, man. Just watch movies at night and get up early for work and take care of the kids the rest
Honestly,
of the time.
Honestly, that's an editor needs that, don't you?
It was tough by the end. I was about at the edge of what I could do. And Coco on the very last day had watercolored a little painting for me to give me as a, actually I got her here, wrap gift.
Huh.
She gave that to me and like left it in a little box, and I opened it later and so close to tears, because I was so tired, so happy that this was over with and what we got. And I texted her like, I don't know if I'm just real tired, but I'm about to cry right now. Thank you so much.
That is
so nice. I was there.
Well, I'm sure it was nice in a lot of ways. Plus the fact of what you'd put her through, the fact that she was still in a good
place. My friend, I know. Right?
And in a good place and wanting to give you something. Yeah. Instead of say, by the way, lose my number.
Yeah, exactly. No, we're still good friends, and she's ready for the next thing. She's just a hard worker. So.
And did you get like a local festival in Atlanta? Like, did you get a red carpet thing going? And
this is the part you're going to be mad about, is I entered a few festivals and big ones and didn't get into them anyways. And I decided the festival route was not going to be for me. Honestly, I was scared. I just wouldn't have time to be able to do any of those, because I have a full-time job and I'm in Atlanta and I'm not ready to just leave every weekend for a year. So we picked a distributor and said, let's just release it and see what happens.
Doesn't bother me at all. I think it makes sense.
I think that there's a place for film festivals, and part of me is a little sad that I missed out on something like that. Maybe on another one, I'll feel like I have time to, but
it definitely would have been at least really cool to get you and Coco walking. I know the stand and repeat thing is cheesy, but it's also undeniable.
It would be fun to get everyone together again and watch something, but one day we'll do it again.
Yeah, no, especially I think you're right at the feature level, you know, the big and yeah, actually as creative and experimental as your film is, yeah, those big festivals were just going to be, they're looking for something else.
Tough. The tough thing about big festivals too is you're up against $5 or $10 million independent.
Yeah, the thing is, their heist films are going to be, yeah, are going to have, you know,
William Dafoe in it. Like, I was going to say a named
actor in it. And then when they're looking at the smaller films, they're going to want something that's not as commercial.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Tough. I know the festival racket is, it's weird. It's weird. I had a long chat with someone this morning about why his film is not being embraced by by close-minded festival programmers. Our festival actually did embrace him. What are you going to do?
Oh, great. Well, that's wonderful. I think there are a lot of festivals out there that will do that and cater more towards true, like, independent movies. You know, people just out there doing the best they can because they love it. I didn't know if that was going to be worth it for me. So it's a call, and I don't know if it was the right one. We'll find out one day. But
maybe according to Film Freeway, there's 12,000 festivals in the world now. So honestly, don't know how people choose. We're lucky our two festivals are ranked in the top 100 best reviewed. So I think people tend to submit because of that.
Yeah, good, good. I also don't know, like, really what it means when you put 10 or 50 L'Oreals. Is that what they're called?
Yeah, laurels.
On your poster. Like, does it help or does it not? I don't really know. Maybe it does, maybe it doesn't. I don't know if there's a way to, like, quantify that.
You know, maybe the people at distributors would tell you, maybe they care. But when you look at those laurels, you know, look, you know, Sherman Oaks Film Festival might be ranked in the top 100 worldwide by filmmakers, but when laurels from Sherman Oaks Film Festival was on someone's poster, I'm sure most people are like, I don't give a fuck.
They're like, they were in a film festival. All right.
Yeah. Like, they were, but, like, you know, I can look, by the way, I mean, we get, you know, 1500 submissions for two festivals every year. And we only screen about, you know,
what, 30, 40,
one in 15. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Of those. So I see a lot of stuff at other festivals that I know is bad.
Mm-hmm.
And I know they're just showing it because they're like, oh, this person's local, and they'll bring their friends out. Let's put some asses in the seats.
Yeah,
I'm
sure.
Like, yeah, so laurels probably don't. I don't know what laurels
mean. It's tough.
Unless it's, like you said, Toronto, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, something that's recognizable. Sundance, Slam Dance, Toronto.
Yeah. Yeah, those might carry some weight. But honestly, I know people who went up to Sundance, had an amazing experience, came home, and their life was actually exactly the same.
Oh yeah, nothing happened. And I've seen plenty of movies that have 50 laurels on their screen, on their poster. I'm like, yeah, but this was not good.
I'll get my ass kicked on occasion for this, but yeah, if you have 50 laurels, that means you're a trust fund kid or you're just wealthy, because
you can afford all those
alone. To get into 50 means you submitted to 1 or 200.
Yeah,
200 times $50. So you had a $10,000 best just submission budget. Right.
You could have done another movie with that.
You should have. I don't know.
But there's no right answer.
You went straight to and that's cool because. And it's very cool that you're on Tubi, even though you couldn't control where the commercials land.
Actually, you do. The filmmaker chooses at what point a commercial break will be. Yeah, maybe you don't know that. You go in. That's part of your submission process, is to mark all the time codes, like break here, break here, break here, break here, break here. And then Tubi will decide if this break is going to take a commercial right now or not. But at least it's like in a place or it should be.
That's nice.
YouTube, not so sure about that. That's the big offender, I think.
I guess that means that, like, when my kid and I watched the Scream series on Tubi and the commercials were like mid-dialogue, that just means that the studio didn't even bother marking the spots.
Nope.
They just
sent it over and they gave it to a PA or someone to figure out who didn't know what they were doing, or it's just
totally
random.
Or they just didn't bother. Like, this has been whatever. We'll just throw it on.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad you got to pick your spots. That's nice. And that's obviously where people should try to watch it, I would think.
Yeah, Tubi's great. YouTube's great. I think YouTube actually gives a bigger return right now, but YouTube's different because it's worldwide immediately, and Tubi's not everywhere yet. So,
oh, Tubi chooses markets as they go.
Yeah, well, they're not in. I think they have different deals for England specifically. I know it's the same in Australia, and then in Europe, as Wild West, I guess. I don't know.
Oh yeah, did you have to provide like subtitles and things for different markets?
I did subtitles English and Spanish, and then that's the only ones that we've been requested for at this point. But
interesting. Well, that's cool. So by the way, was this you when you gave your personal bio? You were pretty humble. You didn't go on and on. But before, were you had you gotten to direct your own stuff since film school? Had you done some side projects in between?
Or no. Work? I had directed a couple shorts in school and then mostly just editing. You know, that's what I really like doing, is sitting in the chair and putting pieces together. It's so rewarding and fun, you know, to have that creative control. But when you're editing, a lot of times I'm spending time cursing the director. Like, how could you do this? How am I supposed to put this together? This person teleported across the room. How am I supposed to get from this scene to this scene? There's like no transition here. And just, man, I hate that. So I was like, I can do better than this. Well, I can't, because the first thing I did when I sat down to make the very first cut, I did the exact same thing and started cursing myself. How am I supposed to get her from here to here? How did you not shoot that? Because it's not as easy as you think.
That's so
to
funny.
To foresee that kind of stuff.
But you had, but you had shot all your, I'll call it B-roll, even if it wasn't. You did all your inserts. I'm sure you always had somewhere to go. Go to a phone.
I mean, if you weren't ever taken out of it by a weird continuity thing or, you know, something like that, then I guess I did my job. But they're definitely in there. Like, dang, I don't know how I'm going to do this. I can't believe I missed this on set.
I guess that's the bonus of the tension of the heist, right? That, people get into the story and yeah, you don't notice
anything. Yeah. Yeah. Hopefully.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. Well, so did it give you the taste to do it again?
Yeah, I think so. It was the toughest part about doing a feature was just committing to it and saying, you know what, I'm going to do this come hell or high water. And, I did. And now it's like, man, that was actually possible. I think I could do this. Yeah. I think I could do this again. So looking for another break in my schedule, waiting to see if this one gives me some return back to pull the trigger on that, but definitely.
And will you, are you inspired by the single location thing, or it was just like a one-off because you were working with that company and you knew their budgets, or?
I think that you could make more of these Solid Rock Trust movies very easily, because it's a heist, and I come up with a dozen heists that need somebody in control of, you know what I mean? And you could kind of play with the character of Maddie, like what is she onto next and what kind of trouble can we get her into? One of the other things though that I tried to do with this was take a genre that everyone knows all the rules to, and then kind of play with all those rules throughout the whole time, right? So everything that is supposed to happen in a bank heist still happens here. You just see it in a little bit different way. And I think I want to try that with like a horror movie next, because that's another genre that very specific things need to happen. And I think we could turn some of those rules on its head and, you know, play with the audience a little bit. So
that'd be a good idea. Yeah. I mean, I assume you'll take this as a compliment. There was times I was looking at your film and thinking that like, you also could have like, this was fertile ground for a series. Like you could have broken it into like, you know, half hours and just told like really intense, like, and you know, I think it would be a great binge or a great series actually to just get into this, hell, she could be running four heists at once if it were a series.
Yeah, I have ideas for like maybe two or three total that we could play around with and maybe have some people show back up again or not. And that's what you do with a series, right? Is you take the characters that you've established now and kind of play with them in new ways. So
for sure. I know. Isn't it always great when you're into a series and they just start like grabbing smaller characters and giving them their own episode where they're the lead. I always love that.
Yeah, yeah. That is fun.
Pull a supporting character and be like, this is so-and-so's episode. You're like, oh, wow. Right? I think I'm an Aziz Ansari fan, and I think Master of None did that a lot.
Yes, totally. I loved that show. There was only one or two seasons of that, right?
I think he did a third season completely about his best friend.
Oh, man, I need to go back and
check that. He barely appeared in season three.
Interesting. Yeah, TV's been doing that for a long time. Lost is famous for that. And I think that they are really getting good at that now with like the prestige TV we get today, where we can take a break for an hour and like find out someone's backstory and then come back and see what it means, you know, for the rest.
It's very cool. It's very cool. All right. Well, you want to give shout outs to anybody who, besides your family, who probably, were extremely patient while you worked on this.
Oh, they were. Yeah. Wife, so helpful. Obviously we talked about Coco and Joey, our guy who did the score, and then Dakota was the DP. He was fantastic the whole way. He never said no to any of my crazy ideas. And you, Jeff, for bringing me on the podcast. This is great. Thank you so much.
Well, I don't edit these, but I would be tempted to edit out thanking me, because I love talking about film, and I love, I was lucky. I got to go to screening of Guardians of the Galaxy 3 at the TV Academy here in LA. So
nice,
it was like
nice,
top notch screen. And I was, because I have a friend who's a member of the Academy, and I was like, I mean,
take me along.
I loved it. I thought it was brilliant. I just loved everything about that film. And normally I admit I am like the guy who's like, I'd rather watch an indie film that doesn't accomplish what it's after than like a generic Hollywood
story. The stuff that you can tell Netflix story by turns committee. Out sometimes. Yeah. Yeah. You know, the big like $200 million movies that drop on a streamer and you're like, dang, this feels so soulless.
And it's there's exceptions.
There's good stuff, but so many times I'm watching
my wife's favorite guy in the world, Ryan Reynolds. I think his stuff actually has a little extra something to it for the streamers. Mm-hmm. But yeah, in general, it's just like, you know, they're films that no one cared about. It's just product.
Mm-hmm. And you forget about it 2 weeks later.
Yeah. Whereas the people who freaking dig deep and make an indie, they're, you know, it's coming from a place of passion, even if, sometimes they fall on their face, but I'd still rather support it, you know?
That's what I love so much about those is it's someone trying their best. And even if it fails, there's something in there, you know, to find. But thank you so much for like doing a podcast like this, because I love listening to people from that world, you know, talk about what inspired them to make theirs and why it was fun and,
you know,
why they're happy it turned out the way it did. And you've like made a place where all those people can come, you know.
I know you're probably going to be close, actually. Now you're going to be about like 390 something, I think, will be.
Oh my gosh, that's so many.
So when yeah, but it is a cheat because those four questions won, so every guest gets two episodes.
Oh yeah, it gets two, gets a double.
So you're getting close to number 200 guest number.
That's still a lot. That's still a lot, Jeff.
No, I know. And there's even more people to get to. I've actually been ignoring the list because I'm focused on the next festival. But thank
you'll get
you.
There.
And you want to name websites and social media?
Oh yeah, sure. I'm going to give you the link to our link tree that you can put in the show notes. But if you search Solid Rock Trust online, you will find it. We've got a Facebook. We've got an Instagram. We've got, we're on IMDb, obviously, Letterboxd, all the places I said you could watch it, Tubi, Amazon, YouTube.
For sure.
Find us.
And people should check it out. People should absolutely.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
It's a fun challenge to just tell people, look, you know, I know you want to binge the show that everyone, you know, that just dropped on whatever network. But seriously, take a break from that stuff and, you know, jump over to Tubi or YouTube or whatever and watch something that someone
try made. Something different. Yeah. And let me know what you think. You can give me like a comment on IMDb or on YouTube or wherever. Let me know what you
Lord.
Think.
IMDb comments.
Bring it on. Bring it on. I've got 100 on Rotten Tomatoes right now, audience and critic, and I've got like a 9 on IMDb. So people have been enjoying it at least.
Yeah, that's excellent. I don't know how you've managed to dodge the trolls, but I'm glad.
So far I have. Yeah. That's where the pendulum comes back, where I'm like, release it. And I don't think, man, nobody's going to like that. Oh, actually they do kind of like it a little bit. And then hopefully I have the problem where it gets big enough that they start to hate it again. And that would be,
and you've got, I'm basing this on an hour chat, but I think you've got a good enough attitude that when the first troll jumps on IMDb and tries to rip your film apart, you'll look at that and you'll go, ah, finally a troll. Like, you might smile
yes.
over it.
My badge of honor.
Of all the dumb shit, that film I told you about where the guy used cardboard cutouts to make a commentary and all that. All 5-star reviews. And then someone jumps on, I think on Amazon, gave him a 1-star review and said, this film, their complaint was, this film has such a low budget. And it's like,
oh yeah. A low budget is not a complaint, bro.
That's what you clicked on a film with a poster that looked like it was made by a 12-year-old on purpose. And now you're mad that it's low budget. Like, you have no right to, that's not a review.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's like some going people, to McDonald's and saying how I really don't care for the McNugget. It's like, well,
right. Exactly.
So
totally.
Why don't you order McNuggets?
Some people are going to be happy no matter what. And it doesn't even matter if it's, what's the one guy who gave Toy Story 3 like the zero?
Oh, I don't know.
That's like a 99% except for one person. Like, come on. You're always going to have one.
I think it's me, actually. No, I'm kidding.
How dare you?
Anyhow. All right. I will get us out of here because I know you got another thing coming up anyway. So I will do my closing spiel, which is, thank you, everybody, for listening to the Discover Indie Film Podcast with writer, director, producer, editor Rick Ives, whose film Solid Rock Trust you should definitely check out. Show notes will have a clickable link. And the stuff I have to mention is, so this is the Discover Indie Film Podcast. Please like and subscribe to it. Please, hell, you could even write a review if you want. Funny thing is, Rick, I'm
going to do that.
I'm telling you, you're today. Person number two. Have you ever heard me say, joke with someone at the end of this? I'm like, yeah, I've had almost 200 filmmakers on, and on iTunes, there's like 15 reviews.
I have been pretty good about doing reviews after, so get ready, because you're going to get a great one.
All right. And for people that want to learn more about the podcast or the TV series that was born out of it, just go to discoverindiefilm.com. And on social media, it's at DIFWINS. And yeah, I mentioned the series. There is a series on Amazon Prime Video that I produced that is short films hand-selected from the festival circuit.
I've looked through those on Amazon. That's super cool. So you can rent a group of shorts for $1. And what a great idea, because there's not a lot of places to see shorts like that.
They're not, and they're curated, so they're really good. Yeah, and I mean, it's $1 an episode or $8 for a season. And in a season of 10 episodes, you get about 25 short films.
Yeah, totally.
You know, if you like it eclectic, there's, you know, you got your drama, you got your comedy, you got some crazy art house stuff, you got some music videos. It's a little bit of everything. It's like, and you know, it is a bummer in this world. I know it was cooler when we were included with Prime, but $8 to watch 25 films and support 25 people who made a film out of their own pocket. So that's $8 well spent.
$8 is a movie ticket, and you're going to get like enough for, you know, 3 or 4 screenings that you would at a film festival.
Right. So that's Discover Indie Film. And I'll also mention, just so I do program Sherman Oaks Film Festival and Film Invasion Los Angeles. Sherman Oaks, we hold every November, and you can learn about it at ShermanOaksFF.com and at ShermanOaksFF on social media. Film Invasion LA, we call it FILA, but it's FilmInvasionLA.com and at FilmInvasionLA on social media. And yeah, for shits and giggles, because I cannot stop myself, I kind of started my own streaming service. It's a smart TV app that's on. It's called TV HI, and it's on Roku, Amazon Fire TV, Apple TV, Android TV, iPhone, and Android. So all 6 platforms. Only one we're not on is Samsung's proprietary one and Xbox, because we're like, the numbers are really low. But anyhow,
that is for people to watch on marijuana if you can appreciate marijuana safely, right?
That is what Watch TV is. Go to watchtv.
And that's not me, but I appreciate that is there for people who
and
do.
And I always say that, right? Yeah, you, so you've heard me say that at the end of a podcast where I'm like,
yeah,
you don't have to be high to enjoy these films, but it might make them better.
It might.
In fact, maybe Solid Rock Trust. I don't know how if Solid Rock Trust would be good stoned. I mean, maybe.
You have to be the judge of that one.
The funny thing is, I don't even get high. I don't get high that much, but I get high just enough to really appreciate. It's always funny when you're watching TV at night. If you're like me and you're taking an edible to get a good night's sleep, and that last hour before you go to sleep, you're just kind of
watching Adult Swim. Go ahead.
And I'm like, I'm not sure this. I'm like, I'll turn to my wife and go, is this the best movie ever or is it the weed? But, you know, I got to tell you, you get in your 50s and it's harder to sleep. So I honestly, it's just a sleep aid for me.
That's great. I'm not looking forward to my 50s in that case because it's already hard.
I know you. Your body just doesn't feel good at 50, you know? But anyhow, I'll stop complaining about being old. All right, I named everything watchtvhigh.com, and it's at watchtvhigh, T-V-H-I, on all the social media shit, including TikTok, which I don't understand. So someone in their 20s had to be hired to do TikTok, because my God, I
fair enough.
Can't even approach it. But Rick, thanks a lot.
Thank you, Jeff. This has been great.
Congrats on the work. And thank you, everyone, for listening.